Hospice up in Jefferson County, another nonprofit. And it really is about engaging people in end-of-life conversations. So it's got a lot of snippets of just different scenarios of people trying to have those conversations about sharing with your loved ones what your end-of-life wishes are. Do you want to be in a hospital? Don't you? You know, what do you want to have done? Do you want life-saving measures? Do you want CPR? All those things, those kind of little secrets that nobody wants to talk about. And so this purpose of it is to show this out into the community so that we can make those easy conversations. I like to tell people it's the best gift you'll ever give your family is the gift of knowing what you want at end of life.
I think that's so. It certainly was a great relief to me to know what my father, who has predeceased me, wanted, and we had that conversation. And I can't say it was an easy one to start. I think the idea of, if I understand this correctly, you're actually seeing people modeling this, doing these conversations and doing it in different ways and under different kinds of family circumstances.
Absolutely.
So you can get an idea of how it should work, what the words are. I think that's the hardest part is, what are the words I'm to use? Just waiting for them to be put into your mouth is a painful experience for most of us.
Right. And you know, the saying goes, you have to pay taxes and you're going to die. We all know that as a part of life. So why not take care of our, I guess, business for that and make it much easier on those who are left behind.
Now, this is a video or a film. How do people access this and see it? What's going on?
We're going to be having it on October 13th at the Kenosha Public Museum. The movie will start at 6:30. It's about an hour long. Doors will open at 6. And then when the movie concludes around 7:30, we're going to have a panel of myself, one of our social workers. We're hoping for at least one physician, maybe two experts in the area of end-of-life care that open it for a question and answer session for about a half hour.
So that's terrific. It's at the Kenosha Public Museum in downtown Kenosha,
yes,
by the harbor. And it's going to be on October 13th. What day of the week is that? I wonder what day of the week that is. We'll have to look it up.
I don't know.
October 13th?
Yes.
At 6 o'clock, the doors will open.
Yes.
Now, do you have to register to get there?
There is, you can call us at our number, 262-652-4400, to RSVP, and that's just to help give us an idea how many people are attending.
And my colleague here on the board, Troy, says that that's a Tuesday. Is that right? Thank you, Troy.
Yes, thank you.
We're on the ball here. Now, this Consider the Conversation, is this the first of a series of things you're going to be doing?
Yes, there is. Consider the Conversation is the first. There is a second movie that was made, and we hope to show that. But it really is a part of a lot of our community outreach type programs that we like to do. We offer educational programs in our facilities. We put on a teleconference about some end-of-life subject every April and open it up to healthcare workers, community members, congregations. So it's just another example of things we like to give back to the community.
Well, that's terrific. I want to ask another question about this conversation, Rita. My guest is Rita Hagen, the executive director of Southeastern Wisconsin's Hospice Alliance. The conversation about end of life is very, very important. And what is it that the experts recommend, that it take place in the home, that it take place when people are quite young? This is the sort of thing that people tend to put off to the last minute if they have the conversation at all. And so the idea is, just like with having a living will, in terms of how you want
right,
your whether you want fluids withdrawn or whatever, or be hooked up to a machine or not, this is really a part of that whole continuum of end of life.
Right.
Is that right?
And it's usually, I think, traditionally has been geared to, say, you know, post-retirement for people as they start to get to that next step phase in life. But really, as a parent, I have two daughters, and once they're of adult age, I wanted to be able to talk to them about what would you want. I mean, terrible things can happen, and I'd sure like to know what they feel about their end of life, and, you know, do they want to be kept alive on life support? Those are important issues. And in turn, we've sat down with our daughters, my husband and I, and have done the paperwork and shared the things that we want done so that when that day comes for them, it's already difficult. So hopefully knowing our wishes, we know will make it much easier for them.
And that certainly has been the case in my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. It's never too late until it is, right?
Exactly.
And so
absolutely,
that's the pressure on us. Now, you've had some interesting news this year. you won something called the Quality Elite Award. And I'm not on the operating board of the hospice, just on the fundraising board. So I don't even know myself exactly. What is a Quality Elite Award, Rita? And I know you and your staff regard it as extremely important. Tell us why.
The Elite Award is based on 18 questions that are sent home to the families after their loved one passes. That really rates us on several different areas, pain management for their loved one, our response time. Did you feel the nurses provided quality care? Did they meet all your needs? Did you receive enough education about end-of-life care? I mean, there's 18 questions that vary, really all about the services that we provided to them and then their overall satisfaction. The Elite Award is that we scored in the upper 90th percentile on all 18 questions.
Wow. No wonder you're so proud of that.
Yes.
I imagine there aren't too many organizations that manage to score that high.
Well, and it's based on data is who our service provider is for that sends the surveys to families, but we were the only one in southeastern Wisconsin that did win that award.
And it's done. The work is done by a third party? You don't actually send the surveys out yourself?
No, they do it all.
Wow, that's very, very impressive. Mm-hmm. Congratulations again. The October event you were telling me about just before we started going on the air is called Ring and Remember. And that's an annual event, isn't it?
Yes,
that's
it is.
One that's worth talking about because it's not too far off.
Right. Ring and Remember is an opportunity, really, for community members or, and obviously our family members of those who had people who had died with us, to just come in. We have a bell choir that comes. We give people the opportunity to purchase a small bell if they want to, ring the bell in remembrance of their loved one. We hold it in November because that is National Hospice and Palliative Care Month, and we just feel that significance is important. And we give families really a time to meet with staff and talk if they want to. Otherwise, again, it just... part of that whole grieving process, it's important for people to have a time to remember their loved ones. And so we're really very excited and proud of that event.
It's a wonderful event, and it's very moving. I have participated in that event in the past. Rita, as we talk about Hospice Alliance and hospice care, maybe we should step back and, for those who don't really know all the details and exactly what hospice care is, and you mentioned another word just a moment ago, palliative care. I think even fewer people know what palliative mm-hmm. care means or can even spell it. So why don't we take a minute and just talk about what is hospice care, and then we'll talk about what Hospice Alliance does within that field, okay?
Okay, hospice is really, it's more of a philosophy. It's a philosophy of care at end of life. It's to support the family and the patient when we know that the person has reaching end of life. Now, the technical term for end of life or the description by CMS or Medicare is that you have a life expectancy of 6 months or less. Well, we all know that. None of us know that.
There are no clocks, but.
Exactly. But you would not be surprised if the person would not be here within 6 months or certainly within a year's time. And so what we try to do with the family, and I feel we do a really good job of it, is we have a nurse case manager, a registered nurse, who helps look over, make sure their pain is under control, they have their respiratory issues, all their symptoms are managed, that the family knows how to care for them if they're there. If they're in a facility, we collaborate with the facility together. It's a joint effort.
So it's very patient-centered.
Very patient-centered.
In terms of comfort. And other factors,
yes,
too.
Yes, it's really the physical, emotional, and psychological care of the patient and the family.
Physical, psychological, and emotional care. So you've really three foci. Mm-hmm. So it's a different kind of staffing that an organization like a hospice has to have, isn't it?
Yes, and we operate in what we call circles of care, where we have RN case managers, and then they have, say, a group of patients. They have a social worker that also oversees that group of patients and a chaplain. And our chaplains really are non-denominational. They meet whatever religious or non-religious needs. We all know that many people are not religious, but they're very spiritual, and we try to help them, whatever, connect back with the parish or make amends or whatever those kinds of things that will help that person reach end of life. So that's how we use our circle of care.
At what point do you recommend that people contact a hospice on behalf of a loved one? And how does that happen? How does intake happen? You just don't walk in.
Well, I can tell you more times than not, I've had families say to me, I wish we would have had you sooner. I wish we could have notified you sooner. And I want people to know, call us. If you have someone who was given a terminal diagnosis, even in the very beginning of it, call us. Maybe you don't need hospice right now today, but then we'll check in with you every couple weeks or month and see how things are going. Or you can call us back. We have to get a physician's order, but we don't need a physician's order to do the initial intake. So you just call our main number and say that you want to talk to someone about possibly being admitted to hospice or just to learn information, and we have a wonderful intake department. We'll have a registered nurse come out and do a consult, or we'll even just talk to you over the phone.
So that's the first step.
Just lift
up the phone and call. Mm-hmm. And there's no particular medical intervention needed for you to assess whether a person, and I suppose there's all kinds of rules that Medicare and the insurance companies have as to how this works, and we can get into that in just a moment, perhaps. Now, within the this umbrella of hospice care, which is a movement that was very strong in England mm-hmm. before it was here, as I recall, because I remember when we were first starting to talk about this, it was pretty back in the 60s and early 70s, mm-hmm. right? In a bigger way.
Yeah, it started in England first and then got here around 1971 or 73.
I remember the first articles in the New York Times mm-hmm. about it. Now, Hospice Alliance, which is our local provider that you and I are involved with, is a not-for-profit organization. Now, a not-for-profit organization means that it's exempt from paying taxes, but it also means that it must operate in the public good. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
And none of the directors receive any remuneration. And, you know, directors of this aren't paid. It's not like the directors of Exxon or something.
Right.
And the staff gets normal salaries, but everything that they get is approved by an independent board of directors of people from our own southeastern Wisconsin community.
Right.
So that means that in a not-for-profit organization, the excess of earnings over expenses can be plowed back into the organization, assuming there is some. And I know that's always an issue because Medicare, for example, does not fully reimburse you for its services. But we'll get into the money part in a minute. Why, to you, is it so important? I've heard you talk about it's important to you, to your heart and to your head, to be involved with a not-for-profit provider. Why is that, Rita?
Because every day in what we do at Hospice Alliance, it's always about the patient. Every decision we make is about the patient. How will it affect the patient at end of life? How will their family be affected? And what can we do to help the family? And I think the other part about our non-for-profit community-based is simply that we were created grassroots by a group of very involved community members who saw a need for hospice care, and that was in 1981. So it had only been in this country less than 10 years, and Kenosha saw a need for hospice care. I mean, that's amazing, the progressiveness that existed from those really core individuals.
And they were visionary leaders. They
absolutely,
were out front, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And then ever since, our board of directors, not just the operational, but now we have a foundation board for many, many years, all volunteering their time and their talents. As you said, they don't get paid. So there's many things that I'm proud of. Our residential house, where when families who have hospice patients in their own homes, that they just can't do it anymore. They've tried everything they can, and they just can't do it, that we can help them out by moving them into our hospice house. And everyone who's familiar with Medicare knows Medicare doesn't pay room and board for anything. So we do that at our hospice house for a minimal cost. And if families don't have it, then we do not even, you know, charge them for that. So we really do that as a part of our mission.
That's
we are mission-based.
That's part of your community service, and that's sort of the not-for-profit deal. That
exactly.
In order to be a not-for-profit and have the privileges that go with that mm-hmm. and to have contributions be tax-deductible for that individual most of the time.
Right.
There are some exceptions. Consult your tax advisor. You're then, in return, bound to repay that to society,
right.
in essence, by performing a lot of charitable services.
Right.
And that's one of the things you do.
It is. And, you know, We do it in a lot of small ways, too, because the community is so very good to us, so we're trying to give back to the community, and we just initiated Blue Jean Fridays for our staff who are not seeing patients or out in public, where they pay $5 for the entire month, and then we've picked a different charity for the month. The month of October will be for Women's and Children's Horizons.
That's
because
great.
We understand the needs of other nonprofits, and we had about 10 employees participate in the United Way Day of Caring, again, because we rely on volunteers helping Hospice Alliance, so we wanted to give back to the community. And that really is our mission, and that's our philosophy that really all of our employees follow.
That's wonderful to hear. My guest on Community Matters this morning is Rita Hagen, RN and MSN. She's the executive director of Hospice Alliance, which serves southeastern Wisconsin primarily, although I think you sometimes get patients coming over the border from Illinois.
Yes, we do.
We don't exclude them, do we?
No, we
nope.
do not.
Nope. Now, Rita, we were going through what hospice care is, but you've also mentioned that word palliative care. What is palliative care? That's something that's a concept that's much newer.
Yes.
And a little harder to understand.
It is. And it's hard for a lot of people, even those of us in healthcare, because all that we do in hospice palliates symptoms. But palliative care in itself is really looking at the patient way before they'd ever think about hospice. But if they have some sort of chronic condition like congestive heart failure or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, renal failure, we can work with the patient and the family early on to help them. Maybe it's keeping them out of being readmitted to the hospital. If they tend to, you know, every few weeks get admitted, we can come in. We have a case manager who monthly has a visit but checks in by telephone, you know, takes a look at their medications, works directly with their primary care physician if, you know, there's any communication that needs to be done. So that's really, we're like an advocate in a way for the patient as well.
I wonder if we could define it in another way, too, in terms of make it clearer, what would be some of the distinguishing differences between normal medical care, regular medical care, mm-hmm. palliative care, and hospice care? What are...
I guess normal medical care would be you go for your wellness checks yearly and hopefully all is well and you just continue to have yearly checks. But then you have some sort of acute condition that comes up. So you go in and you get that treated, whatever it may be. Maybe it's an upper respiratory infection and you get an antibiotic, or you are having stomach pains and you have testing and you have your gallbladder removed. And you take care of things as they come. But then once they're fixed, they're gone, and you move on until the next issue. Palliative care is that next step where congestive heart failure is chronic. It's not going to go away.
It never will go
away. It never will go away.
It just gets worse,
right,
or maintains.
Or you want it, the goal would be to keep it from getting worse, to keep you out of the hospital. So we work with the family to make sure. We already know when a patient is discharged from the hospital, the most crucial time is that first 7 days from discharge. If we can get them in touch with their physician, have a follow-up appointment, you know, touch base with them to make sure they understood all the instructions they were given, we can keep that patient out of the hospital within what Medicare refers to as that 30 days. That's where palliative care can help. You know you have congestive heart failure, so what can we do? Let's watch your diet. You know, where's your sodium? Let's look at, are you drinking enough fluids so that you're, you know, getting rid of the excess fluid. It works together. There's a balance. So that's really what palliative care does. Helps treat those symptoms and gives you another alternative. So if you are having an episode of CHF, you have someone else to call versus maybe when you feel like you don't have that and you might call 911 or have your family take you into the emergency room and then end up being hospitalized. So it gives you, and really that whole going back to considering the conversation is, what do you want? Because the statistics show that 90% of people state they don't want to die in a hospital, yet out of those, most of them do, even though they tell you right out they don't. So really it ties into all of that. And then the final step would be hospice care. Once, you know, your chronic condition or even your acute condition is non-treatable anymore and there's not more we can do and it's not going to change, and you now know that your end of life is far nearer than, you know, just continuing on. So that's how I would, I guess.
Thank you. Those explanations are very helpful, I think, certainly to me, and I hope to others as well. Now, who pays for this? How does this get paid for? Does this get billed to an insurance company? Does the patient have to pay?
Palliative care does not have a reimbursement right now. Medicare does not reimburse, and usually private insurances kind of follow Medicare's path. So they're not going to be in any rush to pay for it if Medicare's not. Really, what we do as a part of our mission, we see the patients once a month. We try to limit that. We send them a social worker in the beginning just to help tie up any loose ends or get them started on the right kind of conversations, and then bring in team members as they should need it. But there is no billing for that. Now, if you employ a nurse practitioner could do some of those visits, and some of that is billable. We do not do that in our program.
So how do you afford to do this, Rita?
Again, I guess the way we afford to run our residential care is from the goodness and donations of the community members that help us, and trying to really watch our dollars so that we are able to at least keep on these palliative care patients, because it truly is the right thing to do for the community, for the patients and the families.
So this is why you are soliciting contributions, philanthropic contributions from people, and having fundraising benefits of various kinds.
Well, and I think it goes back to when you asked me about nonprofit and being a part of the community. That's what we do, because we are here. We're not a for-profit that has six other or more hospices across the United States. We truly live, work, and care for people that we sit next to at church or our kids go to school with, because we're part of the community.
And you're going to stay in business, but you're not needing to satisfy stockholders who want every last penny run out of it for dividends, which is a big difference as well, too, in terms of the motivation of management. Isn't that right?
Or bonus on admissions or all those types of things.
Rita, you provide care now all over this area. Do you want to tell us exactly where Hospice Alliance operates and
Hospice Alliance,
how people access you?
Sure. Hospice Alliance cares for patients all over Kenosha and Racine, and Kenosha and Racine counties as well. And we have probably the eastern county of Walworth. And the reason I say that is because we really try to stay within like a 30-mile radius, because we want to have decent response times. And if we expand much further than that, then it's difficult for us to get a nurse out. You know, our goal is within an hour, hour and a half.
Now, your principal office is in Kenosha, is that right?
Right. In Pleasant Prairie, we're located off of Prairie Ridge Boulevard. That's where our administrative office is, and then our hospice house is there as well.
Now, the hospice house is located right adjacent to your administration building.
Yes,
They're attached.
We have 8 beds attached to there at the residential beds.
And they've just recently finished a round of landscaping that I think is really quite remarkable, so that all the clients in the hospice house have the most beautiful views of nature outside their windows.
Yes, we have an incredible group of volunteers. The UW Extension Master Gardeners maintains all of our flowers. We've had families donate flowers. We've had employees donate flowers. And many of our local places here in town have also donated flowers to our beautiful gardens for our families and our patients to enjoy.
And a benefactor recently provided a really nice sitting pergola, I think, or gazebo.
Yes.
I can't remember whether it was a gazebo or a pergola.
Yeah, it's more like a pavilion. It's a beautiful covered area in our gardens. We have a couple arrangements of furniture. We have families and patients sitting out there regularly. And that was from Rudy and Dolores Skuglik, was very generous to donate that to us.
Well, it really turned out beautifully.
It was beautiful.
It's a wonderful amenity for, especially as you say, for families to get together with a loved one and enjoy nature when the weather's appropriate. Now, I noticed that there's a parking lot that went up, and being on the foundation board, I know the details of it, but I know our listeners are wondering, what's going on next door just to the east of your building there in Pleasant Prairie? There's a road that wasn't there before, and some asphalt is down.
Yes, we had to purchase some land adjacent to us. We had some long-standing drainage issues in the parking lot itself, but during events, even on some days at the office when a lot of staff are in, every Wednesday we do staffing of all our patients, we were floating up into the front parking lot, which was concerning to me because that's where our families need to be able to park. And so we had to fix the drainage issues. We needed additional property. And then one other concern was when you left our property, you could only turn right, which when you have ambulance dropping off patients, funeral homes, all those types of things, even families, it was a little difficult and a little confusing.
Very confusing, yes.
Yeah, so we... In that land, we're able to fix all of our drainage issues, create additional parking space for families, as well as obviously keep our employees out of the front lot and in the back. And then we were able to put that additional driveway in so that now you can go east or west out of our property.
Now, you opened a hospice house in Racine about a year ago, mm-hmm. and I know that that is closed now. Why don't you... fill in our listeners as to what the status of that is and what happened there.
We, in July of 2013, had finished construction. We had leased space from Lincoln Lutheran. At that time, it was Lincoln Lutheran. They had an additional wing that they were not using. They had been working with our board for several years. I was a board member at that time when they first came on to say, what about bringing some residential beds here to Racine? And so we leased these five beds from them, and we remodeled that area pretty extensively, and we're very proud of our hospice house that opened in July of 13. Officially, I think our first patient actually came at the end of August, around September. And we have provided care for a couple hundred patients since that time. But, you know, Lincoln Lutheran ran into some problems. They went into receivership, and there's a new company that's overseeing many of their properties. And so as a part of their business decision, they're unable to renew our lease. So we need to be out of there by December 13th. But our last patient at the house expired in July, and we really were concerned about taking any new ones on, knowing that we had to be out by the 13th, and we just felt it was best for our families and any future patients to make the decision.
That sounds very prudent. You have any immediate plans to go back into Racine to provide beds at all?
We're looking. We've had some really great partners who have allowed us to come and look at their space and have offered areas to us. It becomes a little difficult because hospice is regulated under the Department of Health, and we have to follow certain life safety codes. And so if they were built without them, then we'd have to put all that back in. And, you know, we did a lot of that at our space in Beckershoop, so we really don't have the funds to do that again. But we continue to look, and we have great hopes that we will at some point find a place.
Well, I hope so, too. But in the meantime, people in that area can continue to use the hospice house residence that already exists. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
As it was in the past.
Right. And it doesn't change anything else. We will continue to provide care, hospice care, to the Racine community like we have for the last 35 years.
And you do that in various settings, in homes, in institutions.
Yeah. Assisted livings, group homes, senior apartments, nursing homes. We always like to say wherever they call home, we provide hospice care.
I wonder if we shouldn't take a look at the future and what your visions are and maybe what you know for sure is concretely going to happen in the next year or so. You got the new parking lot in. I don't think you're going to be expanding that anytime
Mm-mm.
soon. But you do have some new programs and services that have now become last time you were on, we were talking about them maybe happening.
Mm-hmm.
You were testing some ideas. But now they're actually happening. Tell us about them.
Aromatherapy is our newest service. We are, I'm sure everyone's familiar with it. It's the popularity of our scented candles and all the infusers that everyone purchases and puts in their house. Well, what research has shown is those same, that aromatherapy that's used that brings us comfort in our homes helps patients at end of life for many reasons. There are certain scents that help with agitation and restlessness, certain scents that help with nausea, even some that help with pain management or breathing. And so we have one of our employees who has gone off and had training, and we are now starting with our hospice house patients and then moving it out into all our patients in the field to provide aromatherapy. We've also just hired an art therapist. So if anyone saw those art supplies on our wish list, that's why. We have a wonderful art therapist, Becky, who will be doing art therapy with our patients, not just our dementia patients, but really all patients that are looking, you know, some have an enjoyment in art and haven't done it in years. We have our dance music therapist who has done incredible things with patients. If you just have to see it once and just realize the good she's done. We've had some Alzheimer's patients and families haven't seen them talk in several years, and we'll turn on some music and give them a boa feather, and they'll sing at the top of their lungs to songs that, you know, they went back to in their memory. And so it's really quite beautiful, and they enjoy it.
Now, these new services, do they take place? It can take place anywhere and everywhere now.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes. We go into people's homes and provide it. We wherever they call home, same thing. Wherever we
same
provide
with
it, we'll
the dance therapy.
Exactly.
That'll take place in the home or assisted living, perhaps?
Assisted living. Sometimes we do them in a group setting if they're in the facilities. And we also open them up to anyone in the facility. They don't just have to be Hospice Alliance patients. So if
makes it social.
Exactly.
How cool. That's wonderful. My guest, Rita Hagen, is the Executive Director of Hospice Alliance, and you serve Kenosha, Racine, and Eastern Walworth, and people come over from the Illinois side of the Eastern Lake County, Northeastern Lake County. Rita, what is your vision that you share with other professionals for how hospice and palliative care would continue to evolve and improve here in Kenosha, Racine area, and across the country? What do you see in the horizon for here? What is it that you hope for as professionals in your field?
I hope that people really, instead of finding hospice to be the word nobody wants to talk about, I wish people would make hospice be a word that is in everyone's conversation. And instead of bringing silence or fear, that it brings really relief and a sense of comfort. If everybody talked about what they wanted to do, we are all going to die. No matter how much we may think differently, we're going to die. And so I'm hoping that hospice care can be there to help people get to that journey. I would love to see hospice care be much sooner for people. Our Consider the Conversation is because we all need to talk about advanced directives. Medicare now has passed. Well, they'll actually consider that a portion for billing with a physician. So it takes a lot of time, and physicians are incredibly busy. So if I need to sit for 20 minutes to talk about end-of-life wishes, now at least a physician can get some reimbursement for that, and I think that's...
That seems reasonable, because you're asking not about general advice, you're asking about advice as it pertains to you yourself.
Exactly. So I encourage all people to go into their doctor's office and bring that conversation up. Tell them, I want to talk about what I want. I do want to be in the hospital. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be hooked to machines. I do, you know, all those things. If you come on October 13th, we can go over them. We're also going to have a packet with advanced directives information and what to do with it once you complete it. But that's really my wish, is that more people utilize us because of really all the good that we do for families.
My understanding is, from talking with people who are much more expert than I am on the legal aspects, that it's wise to check those documents every so often, those healthcare power of attorneys and health end-of-life instructions, because state laws change, the forms that some hospitals prefer their own form. It's just a good thing to keep those things up to date, and maybe every few years.
And you can
years.
Change them. If a decision you make today, in a year from now, you could decide something completely different. Sadly, have a falling out with the person, you just update it. You destroy the old and you update. The latest dated one will be the one that is followed.
Rita, our listeners often like to get engaged and involved, and I'm always encouraging them to do so. How are some of the ways that our listeners who are impressed by what the Hospice Alliance and other hospices are doing, how can you get engaged with Hospice Alliance here in the Kenosha-Racine area and not only contribute the funds if you wish, but how does one get in contact with you if you'd like to volunteer? I know you use many, many volunteers, and we haven't talked at all about the many, many ways you use them. How would a person get engaged?
To be a volunteer, actually, we just started a volunteer class. Last night was the first one. It'll end next Thursday, but we hold them twice a year. So you can go on our website and look under the volunteer tab. You can give us a call, again, at 652-4400 and ask about volunteers. We have a volunteer coordinator, Andy Shurman. She'd be happy to speak with you about all the opportunities. Do you sew? Do you knit? Do you crochet? Do you bake? Do you do data entry? Are you want to pick up equipment? You want to take a patient for a ride? You want to go sit next to the bedside of someone and provide vigil, read stories, read the Bible, bring in a pet, take a pet for a walk? I can give you, I could go on for hours of all the incredible things our volunteers do for our patients and families, and really for Hospice Alliance, because there's many volunteers who aren't comfortable with patient care things, but they do so much for us within the office administrative side. They work in our medical records. They volunteer in our kitchen area. They volunteer in the yards. I told you about our beautiful gardens. So there's really many wonderful things that you can do.
It sounds, Rita, that no matter what one's gifts, one could employ them very usefully.
Absolutely.
In the service of the hospice movement at Hospice Alliance,
right? Absolutely.
right here at home in southeastern Wisconsin.
If you want to work, go on the website. We can apply for jobs there as well. We're always looking for nurses or social workers. So take a peek at our website.
How many volunteers do you have, roughly, you think?
About 200.
Oh, my.
But they do in many, you know, we have some volunteers who just work from their home and crochet blankets, and we pick them up. We have volunteers who make red, white, and blue blankets because we give all of our veterans get a pin and get a red, white, and blue, like, lap blanket to thank them for their service with a plaque. We have volunteers who deliver those. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things, and there might be things we've never even tried, so please let us know what you'd like to do.
Well, that's a great invitation. Now, what's that phone number again?
262-652-4400.
And your website, how do they find that?
It's www.hospicealliance.org.
Are you on Facebook as well?
We are on Facebook. We have our own Facebook page, and we have a different day designated for every day of the week for something else. Wednesdays is where we publish our wish list. Thursdays is Thankful Thursday, where we thank someone for one of the many generous, incredible things they do. We have days where we focus on our employees. Sundays usually are our insightful day where we have some sort of wonderful saying or expression that's out there. So it's really been a lot neat to have families be able to touch base with us through that as well.
So there's something new every few days, it sounds like, on your Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrific. Rita, I wonder if you would help us maybe, as we wind up our time together this morning, illustrate with a story or two the kind of impact hospice care has on families and on the individuals who receive it.
I just received, actually, that you asked that just 2 days ago, a most beautiful letter from a woman about her mother. And they have been caring for her mom for well over a year. It would be her and her husband. And they wanted to go to a family wedding in Wisconsin Dells. So it's something you probably could do in one day. But they had really not done anything in the last year. So our social worker worked to get them what we call respite, which is allowed under hospice, and they were able to take, you can get up to 5 days. They only wanted three, and so we brought them into our hospice house for those 3 days so that she could go with her children and her grandchildren to this wedding. And really, to us, it didn't seem like anything because that's what we do, but this letter was just so incredible about that she had such great peace of mind, and for the first time in well over a year, that she had something else to think about. And although she loves her mother dearly, it was so wonderful to be able to just, as a family, be together and really feel relaxed and not feel bad for enjoying themselves. And she said it was such a gift that we gave her.
I had never thought so clearly about the gift of respite care before for a family and how important that could be. And you've hit two themes that really touch me there, both the fact that they know that their loved one is safe, and also that it gives them an emotional and mental break as well from the stress of caring.
Yeah, there is caregiver stress, caregiver burden. It's very, very obvious. So it's caring for the caregiver.
Caregiver burden, caregiver stress, quickly.
Really, it's the stresses that are involved, and when you take care of somebody, no matter how much in your heart you want to do it, it's exhausting. It's if you're juggling young children and elderly, you're kind of sandwiched in between that. You're have the pressures of what goes on in life because it doesn't stop for you, even though you're caring for a sick loved one at home, and so it can be very, really emotionally draining. And so that's where we try to use our staff to really help that family, too, to talk about that stress, let them know that's normal to feel. Don't feel guilty for that. It's a lot to take on caring for a loved one.
What signs of stress do you look for or should someone be aware of? Are there particular signals that are particularly important,
I think,
a silly question?
No, it's not a silly question. I just think it's different in all people. I mean, it could be a change in their personality if they usually were more easygoing, if they're more edgy, you know. And that's the beauty of having those relationships. So if you meet on with a family early on before things get difficult, you get to know those things about them. Perhaps they share with you that they're not eating or they look thinner or they're not sleeping, they look exhausted. You know, those kind of things that you learn about people as you get to know them more. And so then you want to work with them to make sure, even if we send a volunteer in so you can take a shower and wash your hair or go to the beauty shop, we want to do that for you.
I want to thank you, Rita Hagen, registered nurse, Master of Science in Nursing, serving as the Executive Director of Southeastern Wisconsin's Hospice Alliance. It's been very educational for me and I think for all of us to hear some of the details about hospice care and palliative care. They're very, very important aspects of our community, and we're fortunate here in southeastern Wisconsin to have been leaders in the whole country in the hospice movement. Now, what is that phone number again? People can call for information to get information to put someone in care.
262-652-4400.
Thank you. Thanks to my guest, Rita Hagen, and thanks to you for listening. Please get informed and get involved and participate in this wonderful movement. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
From the String Quartet in C Major, Opus 76, No. 3, the Emperor Quartet of Joseph Haydn, we heard the first two movements played by the Emerson String Quartet. You're listening to Classics by Request on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Tune into Wisconsin Public Television Sunday night at 8 for the new drama, Indian Summers, on Masterpiece. Venture back to 1932, a time when Britons living in India had every privilege imaginable and everything to lose. Julie Walters stars in this epic series that finds India on the cusp of change. Indian Summers on Masterpiece, Sunday night at 8 on Wisconsin Public Television.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. Violinist Ben Beilman performs Beethoven's Violin Concerto in D Major, Friday, October 2nd at 8 in the Capitol Theater. Information at wcoconcerts.org.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.
want to remind you it's always possible to get your requests in early. And you can do it one of two ways. You can either send a postcard or a letter to Classics by Request, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Avenue, Madison, 53706, or online anytime. Our website is WPR.org. And at the top of the homepage, you'll see the bar that goes across. Click the word music, the bar comes down, and where it says Classics by Request, select that, and it takes you right there to the online request form. Looking at the forecast for Wisconsin today,